Hello and welcome to SourceCast, episode number 25. I'm your host, Joey Lombardi. Side note about last week, I apologize for the delay of this episode. I was sick, and not that you guys generally want to hear me talk, but you definitely didn't want to hear me talk last week. So in this two-week period, what's been going on? Oracle! Oracle has been doing all kinds of interesting things that we're going to talk about, and that is going to be our lead story this week. They picked up two companies this week, and they're sort of interrelated. I think it's an interesting play for municipal services that isn't necessarily the sexiest market, but it is a market that will probably bring in quite a bit of revenue stream. And it's the bread and butter of companies like Oracle and IBM. We're also going to talk about some CEO moves, especially Joe Tucci's swan song at EMC World. And we're going to talk about quadrants, because everyone loves quadrants, so we're going to talk about them. So why delay? Let's start the show. So our lead story is Oracle. Oracle purchased a company called Textura last week. Apparently this company does $3.4 billion in payments for over 6,000 projects each month. So there's a lot of money flowing through the system. This week Oracle purchased Opower for $532 million. Opower is a publicly held software as a service company that provides cloud-based software to utility industry. They already work with over 95 utility companies and they service 50 million homes. So they already have 50 million customers using this product. The Oracle people say it's a natural fit. So now you have a company that deals in the utilities, and you have a company that takes online payments. There's a connection there. Oracle's looking to get more homes, and this is a very easy way for them to do it. But why the acquisitions in their fiscal year end? Why now? Could it be that Oracle is trying to bolster their cloud services and grow through acquisition and not through service improvements? The people at Seeking Alpha have been going after Oracle lately. They've really been hitting them hard over the last few weeks in a series of articles. One of the comments that they've been making is, Oracle has a history of customers being aggravated at them. So now that they're making this switch into cloud-based platforms, there are a series of customers that are unwilling to go to Oracle and are picking other alternatives if they have to make the leap. Even if Oracle did make a change and are changing their operating models, new customers are having good experiences with them. The old customers, should they be forced to do a conversion into a cloud solution, are opting not to use Oracle, but to go with competitors like Amazon. Here's a quote from CIO.com about Oracle's reputation with their customers. And I quote, "It's no secret that a lot of people don't like dealing with Oracle. And there are similar relationship horror stories about all of the big enterprise vendors. A lot of folks say, we don't want the same kind of relationship that we have with them now." So the Amazons, the Googles, and for some reason, Microsoft apparently is not classified as a huge enterprise vendor that people had bad relationships with in the past because they have Azure. But these three suppliers are promising more flexibility, less annoying contracts, and I guess people are going for it. Truth be told, these companies have always grown this way. They acquire software companies, they acquire their smaller competitors that are doing interesting things, and they grow. And customers stay with them. This is what happens. The playing field gets wide, then it consolidates, and you thought you got away from supplier X, and you ended up right back in their lap. And while Oracle is growing through acquisition, they're also suing. A couple of weeks ago in the podcast, we talked about their lawsuits, and there are updates. Oracle's lawsuit against Google, which is now Alphabet Inc., is moving forward. As a reminder, in 2012, Oracle sued Google because of Google's use of the Java programming language. The lawsuit in 2012 didn't go anywhere because the jury didn't make any progress. The new trial with a new jury is scheduled to begin this Monday. And if they find in favor of Oracle, Oracle could win an $8.8 billion lawsuit. The talk is that should Oracle win this lawsuit, this won't have a great impact on Google's bottom line, and it is a one-time payment. And the fact that they're saying these sort of things tells me that someone thinks that Oracle is going to win. Oracle was also suing Hewlett-Packard Enterprise in a really convoluted case regarding another company's reselling of Oracle products. The other company was called Tetrix. And the status right now is that Hewlett-Packard has come back and said, we had no idea that this other company was misrepresenting anything. We had nothing to do with that. And how can you prove that? Interesting tactic from Hewlett-Packard. I really want to see if they're going to win or get out of this lawsuit by playing dumb. It's an interesting defense mechanism. So in summary, Oracle's at a crossroads. They are a company that is clearly trying to grow in the cloud space. As we've mentioned in the previous podcasts, they've been growing through cannibalization of their own existing product base. Now you're seeing them trying to grow through acquisition, which is the smartest play for a company like Oracle. They're also getting very active with their lawsuits again, and you could see some potential income and revenue come in through those actions. Speaking of making moves, we talk a lot about IBM, their maneuvers in the healthcare space, but they have competitors as well. Over the last few weeks, there's a couple of interesting things that have happened that I think show another pattern. Healthcare is going to be a huge market for cognitive computing. I've said it a million times, I'm not going to keep repeating that statement. And while I do think that IBM, through their acquisitions of Truven, Exploris, and all the other health companies that they've purchased, are the leaders, the other companies are doing some very interesting things as well. Google has recently been given access to 1.6 million medical records in the UK. Google is working with the NHS to get access to these records, and I quote from the Daily Mail in the UK, "Under this arrangement, Google's DeepMind has access to the details of all patients who have stayed overnight at Barnet, Chase Farm, or Royal Free Hospitals, or attended A&E over the past 5 years. It is not clear exactly how many patients this covers. The company will also be given information on a monthly basis relating to all inpatients and those attending casually until 2017. Although patients can theoretically opt out of having their information being passed on in such a way, they would first need to be aware such arrangement exists. They would then need to contact the hospital's data protection officer in writing to make such a request." So people in the UK are upset that this information is being passed on, but it is literally the NHS's mission to get this information out to these cognitive computing sources like Google's DeepMind to make patient information better, I guess more accessible is not the word, but to enhance patient outcomes. That's the way I want to say it. And in other news, and this is not to say that this is directly related to the medical and healthcare area, but Microsoft got access to 10 million strands of DNA. But it's not for medical and cognitive computing. Microsoft thinks that DNA could be the next best storage vehicle for data. CBS News reports that Emily M. LaProust, the CEO of Twist Bioscience, has stated, and I quote, "Our silicon-based DNA synthesis platform offers unmatched scale and product quality that vastly accelerates the ability to write DNA at a cost, enabling data storage. We are thrilled to work with Microsoft and the University of Washington researchers to address the growing challenge of digital data storage." So what did I just say? Basically, our DNA holds data. That is what it's supposed to do. It's genetic markers, genetic coding. Someone has decided that, oh, maybe we can put like MP3s on there. Since DNA is a proven data storage vehicle, and DNA has been proven to survive for millions of years, like Jurassic Park. Yes, I know it's fake, but they do find DNA from prehistoric eras. My point is, DNA is apparently very sturdy and can survive a really long time. And these mechanisms to synthesize DNA is getting cheaper. So I guess it's going to get to a point where it's going to be cheap enough to synthesize the DNA and to find a way to actually store stuff on it where consumers are actually going to want to buy it, or at least at an enterprise level. Interesting times. Speaking of interesting times, this past week was EMC's EMC World, and it definitely sounded like a changing of the guard. During EMC World, it was announced that EMC will now be known as Dell Technologies post-acquisition. Michael Dell and Joe Tucci shared the stage, talked about their channel partners and all of the great things that the two companies are going to do, the things that you would expect two leads of a company to talk about during a merger and acquisition. Tucci then, at the end of that presentation, stood up and basically said goodbye and said this would be the last time you would be seeing him as the CEO of EMC, and said goodbye to his customers. And do you use the word fans for CEO? I don't know. It's kind of weird when they have these conferences because people are clapping. I'll say fans. Why not? So Tucci said goodbye. EMC, no more. Dell Technologies. The last hurdle for EMC and Dell is China, but all reports are saying that that should go smoothly since there hasn't been any real pushback on this acquisition from any of the other countries. In other CEO news, Teradata announced that they are getting a new one. On Friday the 6th, Teradata reported a net loss of $46 million in the first quarter of 2016. They also announced that former CEO Mike Koehler would be stepping down. Teradata's new CEO, his name is Victor Lund, was named the company's president and chief executive. It'll be interesting to see if the company can turn around. They've definitely had some losses in the marketing space, but now that they've written off those assets and sold them off to a private equity firm, sky's the limit. And I'm going to close out the technical news with an article from 2 weeks ago that I read about the four suppliers that I talk about most on this podcast: EMC, IBM, HP, and Oracle. Forbes called them the four horsemen of the legacy tech apocalypse. Harsh, Forbes. Very harsh. But once I got into the article, it's kind of a rehash of the same things that we've been talking about for months on this podcast. All four of these companies are struggling with converting their customers from traditional software and hardware into a cloud-based platform. They cite the stocks, they cite their performance, they cite that EMC got acquired as indicators of their struggle. And I guess the point is, you're either someone who believes that these companies will have the ability to transform into something new and cast off the things that aren't working anymore, or they won't. And that they're boat anchors for the companies that are using them. Every single one of them are trying something new. EMC agreed to be purchased. IBM is focusing on cloud, cognitive analytics, and big data. HP split, they shrunk. And Oracle is going through the acquisition route, as is IBM. They're acquiring companies rapidly. They're trying to transform through purchasing. I'm optimistic that most of these companies are going to be successful in these changes, in these strategies. Some of them won't, but that's what this podcast is all about. Trying to read the tea leaves so we can make the best decisions for our companies. And what about making good decisions in your personal life and in your career? If you're a manager, you can start by not treating your employees like mushrooms. If you haven't figured it out, we've shifted over to news that you can use. Why would I refer to an employee as a mushroom? What is this analogy? Entrepreneur.com says an employee mushroom, not the delicious thing that you eat, but you've probably heard the expression feeling like a mushroom, which is to say feeling kept in the dark, left uninformed, and fed a bunch of shiitake. So why is it bad to be a mushroom or to treat your employees like mushrooms? We've talked over the last few weeks about employment trends and how people coming up would rather feel empowered to do their jobs over taking more money. And this sort of information is in line with that thought process. 1 in 4 employees surveyed has quit or knows someone who has quit due to a lack of transparency or communication in the workplace. Point number 2, only 10% of employees surveyed were aware of their company's progress in real time. Point number 3, more than 4 out of 5 employees surveyed wanted to hear more frequently from their bosses about how their company was doing. And the final point, more than 90% of employees surveyed said they would rather hear bad news than no news. So in these simplistic mushroom terms, employees would like to be more informed about the status of the company and how they're doing. But I'll offer the counterpoint, just to play devil's advocate, that sometimes management and leadership within a company can't tell employees bad information immediately for fear of employees leaving the job or finding other opportunities immediately, compounding the bad news and making things worse for the remaining employees. That is a fine line to walk, but there should be middle ground. Employees should have a stake so they know what they're working for and what they're fighting for to improve. And I'm going to end this podcast with the story of the man who sold the Eiffel Tower twice. Con men. What makes con men so good? Do they have information that other people aren't privy to? Not so, says Maria Konnikova, who did a segment for Big Think, and you can see the video on the website. Good con artists listen. And in the case of Victor Lustig, he was a Frenchman who sold the Eiffel Tower twice for scrap metal to 2 different buyers. He didn't get caught the first time because the man he sold the Eiffel Tower to was so embarrassed about being swindled, he never reported it. From reports, Lustig was an avid listener. He listened to these men's problems, he preyed on their physical cues, and he got them to make the deal. I know I've been told many times by mentors, you have to listen, so I will end it with that. You don't have to listen to me, even though I've held you captive in this podcast for probably 11 minutes. But when you have to get something done, listen to the people who you are either negotiating with or working with to get the best out of them. So thank you for listening this week, and we'll be back next week with episode number 26. Take care.